The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We have one of our favorite guests on today, Jeffrey Levine. Jeffrey is a CPA. He is an Ed Slott & Company IRA technical consultant. For those of you that are not familiar with Ed Slott & Company are the nation's foremost experts in IRAs of regardless of whatever it is, anything you want to ask about an IRA, you can ask these folks, and they will know the answer. In fact, they're so in tune, they usually know, like, changes in the laws just about as quick as they know it before Congress knows, that's for sure. And they know it as soon as they're made. And so they are excellent folks to follow. And we've got, and you, in fact, let me give you where you want to go. You go to www.irahelp.com or the Slott Report. That's S-L-O-T-T, theslotreport.com. Jeff is a contributing author to the 2012 edition of the Retirement Savings Time Bomb and How to Defuse It. He's been quoted in numerous publications around the country, New York Times, San Francisco Chronicles, Kiplinger's, and the Wall Street Journal. And lately he's been running around teaching CPAs. He usually teaches us. I'm on the Ed Slott program. I'm master certified with Ed Slott, and he goes, and twice a year we attend a program in which we learn about the changes and what's happening in IRAs and IRA legislation. And Jeff's been going around the country teaching CPAs those things, but he's going to have to stop because pretty soon he's going to be a dad.
He is.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Peggy. How are you guys today?
Great.
And you're going to be a dad real soon.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to change those beneficiary forms.
Well, congratulations. That's really great. All right. Okay. I don't even know where to start. I've got so much stuff. You go around and you teach CPAs. I'm going to ask this question. How informed do you find both CPAs and advisors out there as you go around and you teach? Where should people be turning to get their advice for IRAs?
Well, the first question is really easy. The second question is much more difficult. As far as what the average advisor and what the average CPA know about IRAs, it's really scary how little the average CPA or advisor understands about IRAs. And you know what? It's not terribly unreasonable to understand why, or terribly difficult to understand why. Most CPAs and even most advisors are dealing with such a broad cross-section of topics that it's so hard to devote enough time to one area like IRAs. Our introductory manual for our introductory class on IRAs for advisors is over 400 pages long. And
right,
we're always cutting that back. That's about as much as we feel we can get into 2 full days of training, which is what our introductory class is. So if that's the introductory material, how is the, you know, typical advisor or typical CPA going to know this information? There's just no way they can be experts in every single area, you know, international taxation and retirement taxation and business taxation. So I guess really the second part of your question boils down to you have to do your research as a consumer out there and find somebody who is educated in this area and find out how they became educated in this area. There are, you know, a number of ways in which you can do it, but you've really got to spend the time and read your case law and read your IRS rulings and notifications, and most importantly, stay up to date. My favorite phone call is, well, how much do I need to know about IRAs? I went to a class 5 years ago. 5 years ago, if I had to start listing the things that changed since last year, I could have an hour or 2 hour program off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's true. And you really have to stay on top of things. And I get concerned sometimes when I see some of the mistakes that people have made because they're getting bad advice. Speaking of that, you wrote an article recently called Your 3-Question Mid-Year IRA Checkup. So let's do a mid-year IRA checkup for the folks. The first question you had there was, have you already made your 2014 IRA Roth IRA contribution?
Yes, I mean that's the first place we start with a mid-year checkup, because are you making the contributions? You know, when people ask why don't I have enough money to live on in retirement, it's usually because they have not accumulated enough. By continuing to accumulate money in tax-deferred retirement accounts, you generally can have far more, at the end when you reach retirement. And one of the things that people do, which really bugs me from a financial projection standpoint of view is they always wait until the last moment to make their IRA or Roth IRA contributions for the year. In other words, most people know the tax code allows them to make a 2014 IRA or Roth IRA contribution up until April 15th of 2015. So a lot of times what happens is people go to their CPA, and their CPA will say as they're filing a return, you know, you can get a tax deduction if you make an IRA contribution this year. Why don't you do that? And so they make it. And after a while, people become accustomed to this. Every year they go, oh, it's time to make my 2014 IRA contribution. I'm going in to file my return in April 2015. And while that's good, it's not nearly as good as making a contribution early. Although you can wait that long, you can start making your contribution for 2014 as early as January 1st, 2014. Now, obviously, we're roughly 6 months into the year for that. But today is better than tomorrow, and tomorrow is better than the day after that. So don't wait. It's not that a lot of times, it's not that people don't have the money. They just are accustomed to making these contributions later in the year. And it's amazing, Michael. I've run the numbers many, many times. And if you look at the difference between putting the same money in over time, the exact same dollars, but simply changing your contributions from later in the year, earlier in the year, the difference sometimes can amount to tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in retirement. That's a huge difference, and it's the same amount of money.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. In fact, your second question, I'm going to kind of rephrase it a little bit. Your second question was, have you considered a 2014 Roth IRA conversion? What I want to ask you is, who really should convert to a Roth IRA? Are there some guidelines there?
It's very difficult to figure out definitively who should and who should not, because almost everything that we're looking at with the Roth IRA depends on what happens in the future. For instance, the biggest issue with a Roth conversion is what your future tax rates will be versus what your tax rates are today. If you think your future tax rates will be lower, then a Roth conversion probably doesn't make sense. On the other hand, if you think your future tax rates will be higher or even the same, it might make sense for you. And the reason is that when you do a Roth conversion, you're adding income to your return for the year. So for instance, if you were to convert, you know, $50,000 of your IRA to a Roth IRA in this year, that $50,000 would be added to your tax return this year, and you'd owe tax on an additional $50,000 besides your other income. But the benefit, of course, of the Roth conversion is that whatever that $50,000 grows to, if you follow certain rules in retirement, you can take that $50,000 plus its earnings out tax-free. So if over the next 20 or 30 years that $50,000 becomes $125,000, $150,000, $200,000, whatever it is, that final amount can come out tax and penalty free after age 59 and a half and you've had a Roth IRA for 5 years. So it's very powerful. A lot of people think of it as paying tax on the seed and letting the harvest grow tax free. So I think number one reason to consider a Roth conversion is a hedge against future tax rates being higher. And of course, we don't know this definitively, but I believe that my tax rates will be likely to be higher in the future. Many people believe that the tax rates in the country are more likely to be higher than they are today. And if you look historically, as much as we all complain about our taxes, and listen, no one really enjoys, I have yet to meet the person who really loves writing that check come April 15th. The reality is we're in a relatively low tax rate environment as compared to previous U.S. history. So I believe it's more likely tax rates will go up. And so even if your income is the same or lower in retirement, because of tax rate changes, you may end up paying a higher rate. So it's just something that people need to consider. The other reason I think that's a huge reason to consider Roth conversions is the RMD factor.
Hey, Jeff, hang on to that, and we'll talk about it on the other side of the break. By the way, if you want to call in, the number is 877-711-5611. We'll be back in just a few moments. Stay with us, folks. We've got a great show for you today.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We're fortunate to have with us today Jeffrey Levine, if you're just joining us. Jeffrey is a CPA and technical consultant with Ed Slott & Company. Ed Slott & Company are considered the nation's IRA experts, and I would encourage you to go to www.theslottreport, that's S-L-O-T-T, theslottreport.com. Take a look at that. And buy the books. And by the way, if you ever watch PBS, that's the guy on PBS. In fact, I was in Boston not long ago, and And Ed was on a show in Boston. He has produced some of the top PBS segments in the history of public broadcasting about IRAs and what you can do. And Jeffrey, I always call him the heir apparent. He will be taking over the Ed Slott Company one of these days. Jeffrey, there's been some significant legislation that have come out. I want to kind of jump to that. By the way, I want to encourage you all. Now, this is an opportunity for you to ask a person who really, really, really knows. As far as I know, I don't think you can stump him, but I guess you can call and try. The number is 877-711-5611. That's 877-711-5611. Give us a call. And if you have any questions about your IRAs, but Jeff, we were talking during the break, and there's a couple significant pieces of legislation. And in fact, the third question you had for your mid-year checkup was, are you aware of all the new rules that may or may not affect you? So let's talk about those.
Sure. Well, we had a big one come out just a few weeks ago. And, you know, it's not just legislation. Legislation is big when Congress makes these sweeping changes. We'll probably have legislation later this year. If I had a guess, we're probably going to have some sort of legislation after the election that extends a number of items that have expired earlier, or expired at the end of last year, a so-called extenders bill. And there are a few key IRA items in there, particularly QCDs, qualified charitable distributions. Those are not currently in effect. So that's an update. That's not an update. That's a law that expired at the end of last year that has not yet been renewed for this year. But if I was a betting man, and I very hesitant to place money on anything that has to do with Congress, but I think that at some point later this year, we'll probably see an extenders bill that brings back QCDs. But beyond simply legislation that comes from Congress, we've also got updates and developments all the time in the form of IRS rulings, court rulings, IRS announcements, bulletins. There are all these different sources of information that an expert really needs to make sure they're aware of in order to give clients good advice. For instance, just 12 days ago, the Supreme Court, the highest court in the land from which there is no appeal, came out and decided that inherited IRAs are not retirement accounts. Now, that sounds really crazy. How are inherited retirement accounts not retirement accounts? But this was the decision before the Supreme Court, and it actually was not such a simple case. This was a case, Clark v. Ramaker, which went from a Wisconsin bankruptcy court, then to federal district court, and then to Court of Appeals, and then all the way up to the Supreme Court. And at the heart of this case, what the real question was can creditors collect money from an inherited IRA? And why is this important to your listeners? Well, very simply put, if you leave an IRA to your child or your grandchild or someone you care about, and something happens to them, maybe they're in a car accident or maybe they have some money problems, can someone come in and take away your IRA, which in many states is creditor protected? Now, in some states, now seven states have expressly under state law provided protection for beneficiaries with inherited retirement accounts, but that leaves 43 states with no such protection. And so what the Supreme Court had to decide was, are these accounts protected under federal law? The real question here, Michael, came in because the federal law says that retirement funds under a list of code sections are exempt. And there's no question that inherited IRAs are under those code sections, but are they retirement funds? And the Supreme Court, in a landmark ruling and in a 9-0, they all agreed. You know, we always say they can't agree on anything. It's half are on one side, half are on the other side because it's split politically. Well, not so in this case. It was 9-0. They said inherited IRAs are not retirement funds. You have to start taking money out of an inherited IRA as a non-spouse beneficiary, like a child or a grandchild, in the year after the year you inherit. You can't put money into one of those retirement accounts like you can your own. So how, in the Supreme Court's mind, could they reconcile the fact that it's a retirement account, but you've got to start taking money out right away? It just didn't make sense to them. And so they ruled that they're not retirement accounts and thus not protected under the law. So where this is a big deal for your listeners particularly is when they have a large IRA that either they're leaving to their loved ones or they think they might inherit. If there are potential creditor problems, you may have to look at other solutions if you're in one of those 47 unprotected states. Do you need a trust? Do you need some other way to protect those funds? And that's a real concern.
Yeah, that is a real concern. So do you expect this to have huge ramifications out there on IRA planning? And what is, what do people do? They start using IRAs less? What do you think?
Well, I don't know that they'd start using IRAs less because they're still fantastic tax deferral vehicles. And to be honest, what are your other choices? If you left $1 million in cash to that person, they'd still be subject to creditors.
Sure.
So one thing that people may look to do is to incorporate the use of trust as an IRA beneficiary, which, as you know, Michael, we've spent hours, maybe days alone on this one topic because it's so complicated and there are so many pitfalls. So our feeling as a firm in general is that if it's not needed to use a trust, we try at all possible to avoid them just because of the sheer complexity and the chances for error. That said, in certain cases where creditor protection is a potential issue, the complications may be maybe worth it. The benefits may outweigh the disadvantages of the case. Another thing that people might look at is where they live. Again, there are seven states right now which have expressly protected these accounts under state law. And bankruptcy and creditor protection is a very deep and detailed area, and there are attorneys that specialize just in that area. But I can tell you that when it comes to retirement accounts, it's pretty simple. IRAs, 401ks, et cetera, that the owner has are generally protected under the federal bankruptcy statute. And some states use their own state statutes for bankruptcy. However, even in those states, retirement accounts are generally protected. So for an owner, there's not a lot of concern in most cases with regards to the bankruptcy protection of their retirement account. It's only when it passes to the beneficiary. And in light of rules or this ruling from the Supreme Court, Michael, I think we're likely to see many more states come on and say, you know what, we want to protect them under our state law. We want to protect them under our state law because they want to keep people in their state. They don't want people moving to other states for creditor protection. For instance, Florida or Texas have both adopted state provisions that protect inherited retirement accounts from bankruptcy under the state statutes.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, I still think they're viable. I think just people have to be much, much more careful. All right, I'm going to switch a little bit here because there's so many things to cover. But in fact, I tell you what, since I've got less than a minute to go, so I'm going to throw this out, and this is what we're going to be talking about when we come back. What happens if you miss your RMD, your required minimum distribution that you must do starting the year in which you turn 70 and a half? What happens if you miss that? The Slot Report mailbag came out with some comments on that just the other day, and so I want to cover that with Jeffrey. So as I said before, you've got one more segment. If you'd like to ask a question, call 877-711-5611 because we've got IRA expert Jeffrey Levon with us today, and it's a rare opportunity. You have an opportunity to ask a question, so give us a call. Anyway, we're back in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've had a great show today with Jeffrey Levine. Jeffrey is a CPA and technical consultant with Ed Slot and Companies. As I said, go to www.theslotreport.com. And if you've got any questions, we've got a call on the line. We're going to go here in just a second. The number is 877-711-5611. And right now we're going to go to the lines and talk to Maria from Denver. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What an interesting guest.
Thank you.
I have a question about the beneficiary. How do I find out what seventh state is which they can, and it depends where they live or where you live. When you leave young grandchildren, Roth IRA or any IRA.
Okay, you got that, Jeffrey. I think basically is there a state impact on leaving money to a grandchild, presumably under the age of 21, a minor? Is there any state income pact? And maybe you could address what are some of the best ways to do that.
Thank you. Well, obviously, there's lots of estate issues that come along with leaving a beneficiary an IRA. Now, what's interesting about IRAs is there's a combination of federal and state rules in play at all times, because the federal tax rules are the federal tax rules, but IRAs are a type of property, and most property laws are found at the state level. So when you leave a young person an IRA, for instance, in some states, the age of majority is 18 or 21. In some states, as I mentioned, there are seven states right now, Alaska, Arizona, Florida, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, and Texas, that expressly protect inherited IRAs from bankruptcy under state statutes. So there's always these combinations of things. And, of course, income tax rules vary from state to state. In my state, like New York, Michael, taxes are taxes are pretty steep. If I were to move down to your area of Texas, it would be much nicer. No state income tax.
Hey, come on down, Jeffrey. We'd love to have you.
I mean, that's a big difference. So you want to look at things on a case-by-case basis. And there are actually times when it matters what the owner state is. There are times when it matters what the beneficiary state is. So you really need to make sure you're working with a professional in your particular area that understands the rules of those states, because I'll be honest, I don't know the specific state rules for all 50 states. I like to think I know a lot about IRAs, but even that would be a tall order. So definitely always consult with someone who is, local to you, who has the knowledge of not just the federal rules, which are obviously important, but then how the local state laws impact that planning as well.
Okay, so like, for instance, Maria's in Colorado. If she's going to leave something to a child, for instance, in Texas, she would want to reach out to who in Texas? Would it be a CPA in Texas? Who would a tax attorney? Who would one reach out to?
It depends on the particular issue at hand. If she's, she wants to make sure that it's tax efficient, then maybe a CPA might be the right person. If it's really about protecting those assets long term from creditors and other situations, or maybe there's a special needs beneficiary that someone's planning for, then it's probably going to be an attorney. And a lot of times, Michael, it's a combination of professionals. There are often times when a client comes into my office and we'll sit and we'll talk all about the various tax provisions of an IRA trust, but when it comes down to it, I'm not an attorney and I can't draft those documents. So I'll call up a colleague of mine or recommend that we have a joint meeting, and we'll sit and we'll go through. And, it's two professionals sometimes. Sometimes it's the attorney and the CPA working together hand in hand. I might tell the attorney, well, if we incorporate this provision into the trust, we'll be able to, save the client X number of tax dollars, and then the attorney can help draft that into the trust with the specific language that applies in that state. So sometimes it's different professionals that are, it's professionals of different specialization, and sometimes the same specialization, but in different states. I can't recall the number of times I've seen attorneys in one state call up attorneys in the other state and say, hey, I'm working on a document.
Right.
I need to know what specific language needs to go in there for your state.
Yeah, and Maria, I know a lot of people in a lot of different states, so I don't know what state you're talking about, but if you want to call us after the show, maybe we can help you out, because we do know a lot of people in a lot of states. So thank you so much for calling.
Oh,
Matt.
Thank you. It helped
you
a lot.
Thanks. Thank you.
Maria, have a great day.
All right, Peggy, you had a question.
Yeah, we have Eddie, actually, from Houston on the line. Eddie, welcome to the show.
Yes, I would like to know if one can write off your loss in your Roth IRA.
Oh, great question.
That is a good question.
So this is one of the most complicated things when it comes down to it. But the answer is usually no. Unfortunately, we don't have probably enough time to go through all the different tests. There are actually six tests that you need to have in order to be able to claim an IRA loss. Now, the first one is you have to have basis. And the reason I said it was a great question is because usually people ask this about their traditional IRA. And usually in a traditional IRA, there's no basis. And what I mean by that, I just mean there's no money in that account for which you already paid tax. Because usually with an IRA, you put the money in, you get a deduction. Or you put the money into your company plan and you didn't pay tax in it, and then you rolled it over. But with a Roth IRA, there is usually basis because there's no tax deduction going in. Or if you convert money, you paid tax. So there usually is after-tax money in a Roth account. Now, in order to get a loss, though, and as I mentioned, it's relatively complicated, and there are six tests that actually have to be passed. The first test is that you have to empty, after basis, is that you have to empty everything in the account. So it's not just the one Roth IRA that had a loss, but if you have two or three different losses, or two or three different Roths, I should say, you have to empty them all. They all have to go, and there has to be less money in them when you distribute them than money that you've paid the tax. So I'll give you an easy example. Suppose you put $5,000 into a Roth IRA years ago and you didn't pay the tax in it. It grew to $15,000. Fantastic. But now the market had a downturn and it dropped to $7,500. To you, or to me even, that may seem like a loss. Now you had $15,000, now you only have $7,500. But if you were to withdraw everything from that retirement account, because you've only paid tax on the $5,000, and you still have $7,500 left, you don't get a loss because the amount of money that you paid tax on is still less than the amount of money you took out. If the account went from $15,000 all the way down to, let's say, $3,000, then you may be able to claim a loss. But again, even then, it's unlikely. There are so many tests. I've given you the first. The first is that there must be basis. You have to have after-tax money. The second test is you have to withdraw all the same accounts. So if it's a traditional IRA, all your traditional IRAs. If it's a Roth, all the Roth IRAs. The third test is the amount that you withdraw has to be less than the after-tax money you have remaining in the account. That's unlikely. Fourth is you have to itemize deductions because it's claimed as a miscellaneous itemized deduction. Then you've got to exceed the 2% floor of AGI, which is a complicated tax issue. It could be subject to the 3% overall limitation, and on top of that, it might be lost if you're subject to AMT. So there's the sixth test. That's why I say you may be able to claim it, but almost no one can. I mean, if those last three sounded really complicated, it's because they are.
Wow.
Thank you, Eddie. We appreciate the great question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jeff, for being on. It was just tremendous. We could have you on for about a week. And because there's so much going on. But anyway, thank you so much for being with us today. And good luck to you on the birth of your new son.
And thank you, folks, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you. And thank you for listening, folks. It's great to be with you each and every day. Hope you make a little money today. But more than anything else, I hope God blesses you and your family.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.